You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. .904 on the West Coast. Little bit of rare earth.
All right.
Yeah, that's a good song right there. I'm not going to lie to you. If you grew up in the 70s, we were talking about Contien earlier, and Mike just said, I think my dad was up there. And so I said, is your dad fucked in the head? Is your dad fucked in the head? And what did you? What was your response to that?
Oh, I didn't respond. I don't know.
No,
he's not. But
he's not.
He left me a ton of books, man. Like books that you haven't even read. I know you haven't because there's like only one.
Right.
And they were given to the guys in the units. But he has one. I'm going through it now. Shoot. Anyway, he's got one written by a guy, and it's all of the stuff that went on with their unit. And then he's got one right here. It's called From Brian Strasser. I Never Heard the Thunder. And it's a collection of narratives by a Marine who lived through the combat of Vietnam and his return home to America in memory of the 205 Mike 3-1 heroes that didn't return. They lost 205 guys in that time span.
It's crazy. So last night, you're watching this, I'm watching it. And it talks about, you know, the Marines push up to Contien, which is just south of the DMZ, and they park under the artillery fan of the NVA artillery, and they just get piss pounded, and then they go moving into the dismounted, you know, and they had tanks, but you know, they couldn't get across a bridge, and then they get into it with the NVA, and I mean, the casualties they suffer are, I mean, I would tell you this, it's almost embarrassing when we consider what we've been a part of. It's like we didn't go that, the world that those guys lived in. Yeah, I'm not, that whole thing, I'm not worthy. Yeah, you guys, that's incredible stuff in 1967. That's when your dad was there. Pretty amazing.
Well, you know, so the book, I don't think you caught the title, or it was in memory of the 205 Marines from Mike 3-1. Catch that?
He's not talking about a battalion.
A Marine company only has 165 guys in it. They lost 205. So they had over 100% casualties in that rotation.
But again, that's
they
just
were there. That year they were there.
But that's just KIA, right?
Yeah, that's just KIA. Out of one company, 165 Marines assigned to the company. That's a full TO company. 205 during the deployment in that year were lost, killed in action. So it's over 100%, meaning that even when they replaced those guys died, and their replacements died, and their replacements died. You know, and that's why, you know, you hear the stories of guys, and they're like, when the new guys came, you didn't want to know their name.
Right.
You didn't want to know where they're from. You didn't want to know anything about them because in just a couple days, they're going to be dead. And you don't want to go through that grieving period. So, I mean, for a new guy, could you imagine that? You're a new guy, and you're a Marine. You know, you're like, ah, oh, hoorah, and then all of a sudden you join this unit and no one's talking to you. And then it doesn't sink in until you're kind of the older salt, and you're sitting around, and now it hits you. Man, don't get close to anybody because they're going to be gone. That's just amazing. I mean, that's just crazy to me. You know, the one thing that, too, that really kind of sparked, and I believe this, is, you know, we always say the greatest generation was the, you know, World War II generation. Well, you know what? After watching this Vietnam thing, they're just as great. They did things, you know, I think every generation that goes to war is the greatest generation. Any generation that goes through those types of things together, the greatest generation.
It's amazing what they endure, just the combat. I mean, I was thinking about, it got me thinking about, you know, the way we fight today. Nobody could ever do the things the NVA did to us today. I mean, we would annihilate them. You know,
yeah.
In fact, I got an email from Mike Martin.
Holdman Trail would never existed.
The precision guided munitions, they dropped more munitions on the Ho Chi Minh Trail than they dropped on Germany and Japan combined. That's how much tonnage. And it's been interesting watching. All they did was they sent young people, teenagers down there, right? They had the little hat on, and they had like the stick that went over your shoulder, and then two baskets hanging on each end, and they filled in, right, B-52 arc light craters, you know, 1,000, 2,000 pound bombs, craters like that. And they did it every day, and they did it for years. I mean, now we'd simply target the trucks as they came down. You know, we could target the road and bridges and do that every night, but we would target the trucks, and every truck would get something through the windshield. And we'd stay on that.
It would have been slaughtered with today's technology.
And then the NVA, when they tried to infiltrate, and whenever they tried to mass, we would see them. You know, we have technology that sees all that. You know, and they would be annihilated. But you know, like when your dad, you know, went up to the northern edge of the South Vietnamese border, right along the DMZ, we didn't have that. And Mike Marletto sent me an email this morning while I was talking about counter battery radar. I said, you know, I thought, when did that get invented? Because these guys talk about just being, you know, at Khe Sanh and Con Tien, which aren't that far apart. Just talk about being in that fan and just getting annihilated. And he said, well, it was available in the 70s. It quickly got overwhelmed. And what he said, what you're thinking about didn't really come online until the 80s. And so you're out there alone and afraid as guys get,
right,
as guys fought. And what it's, and then when you think about that, and Mike just said that's in that company. And I just looked up that Strasser, that guy, right?
Yeah.
Brian Snooks Strasser had become a squad leader in Mike Company in November of 1967. He was 19 years old. I remember thinking, where's all the old guys? All these guys are my age. And he's talking about this guy named Roy. He said he was young, but he looked younger. He looked like he was 15. But you knew he had the metal about him. You just knew that. Strasser returned home to Ohio in the spring of 1968. He was still 19 after a year in Vietnam. He didn't want to talk about Vietnam to anyone. But as years, then decades passed, he became more and more convinced that he needed to reach out to the families of the men that he'd seen die. He needed to let them know what happened, that they were not forgotten. And then he talks about reaching out to this one guy's mother in September of 1993. What is that, 25 years later? Yeah, and then Strasser identifies himself as one of Roy's squad leaders, and then he walked through his time with Roy, telling her Roy did not suffer, and he didn't die alone. It's amazing. The men were getting hit hard by small arms, machine guns, rockets, and artillery. You were behind a small Vietnamese grave shooting over it whenever it was possible. Burris was fighting next to a Marine named Kevin Walton, Strasser wrote, quote, a fellow North Carolinian who entered the company as a white guy who had many preconceived ideas about race, who never envisioned a world different than the one he lived in the 60s. He wasn't mean-spirited, and he was one of the bravest Marines that I'd ever met, but he had never been around black people. As it turns out, he and Burris are raised 20 miles apart. You spend nights and days in a bad situation, and you're both fighting for your lives, and you gain a different perspective. Kevin would tell the story that all hell's breaking loose and Roy gets mad. He's yelling at the enemy, you know, something you get tired of getting shot at and you're tired of being scared. Then Walton, the white guy, sees Burris get hit and calls out to him. Burris didn't reply. Strasser said what he saw next has stayed with him ever since. I saw a white guy carrying a black guy towards our line. It was Kevin carrying Roy. He was crying. Strasser says the battle changed Kevin Walton completely. What I saw was a complete metamorphosis. These guys carried this, right, for 25 years.
Yeah.
Before he writes the book Mike's talking about to unload. And then Mike, you think about, Mike, tell people, what do you expect out of a 19-year-old Marine?
What do you expect these days?
Yeah, what do you expect these days out of somebody who's 19 and has been in the Marine Corps for less than a year, probably?
Today you expect a whole lot. I mean, it's ridiculous what we put on these kids, man. I mean, they're doing stuff that ambassadors do for the United States. They're, in regions, they're doing stuff that platoon commanders and sometimes even company commanders back in the day didn't even have available to them. It truly is crazy, man. I mean, when you look at the responsibility that we put on all of these guys, it just boggles my mind sometimes that we do that stuff.
Can you imagine 19-year-old squad leader in Vietnam? I mean, your dad's generation.
Yeah, my dad was young. I mean, he was probably 18, 19. And, the only guys that were older were the officers, and not by much.
Right. Yeah, the officers were early 20s. Company commanders,
yeah.
Mid-20s. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. And like I said, just humbling when you watch. But, you don't expect a 19-year-old that's been in the Marine Corps for less than a year, maybe 18 months, to be a squad leader in combat, in contact with the North Vietnamese Army. That's a little bit much. I don't care what era we've ever been in. And talk about the greatest generation. Holy shit, man. I would submit to you this after, I joined the Marine Corps 1983. I've been around it since then. And I've been around, I was raised, grew up during Vietnam, and I've learned about those guys. I would tell you this, there's no greater generation than the generation of Vietnam veterans. None.
What they had to endure?
Right.
Yeah.
There's no greater generation that is borne a heavier burden than the Vietnam generation. And Vietnam veterans. Nobody's dealt with what they dealt with. And again, to include, I mean, even in, when you read in World War II, you don't read about too many 19-year-old squad leaders, when they went ashore. Now, maybe later in the battle that happened.
No, they were much older.
Right. But here's a guy, he's 19 years old. He's going to be, and I mean, the ages of the shows I did on Quezon, when you ask those guys, yeah, that was routine. Most of the Marines there are 18, 19 years old. And you're just like, wow, that's incredible, that they're so young, Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because Ken Rogers, who's been on, talks about he was one of the old guys, and he was like 20, 21 when he was at Quezon. Just like, holy shit. Let me play, this is this is somebody talking about these two Marines that meet. Kevin Walton is the white guy who carries Roy Neal Burris, who carries a black guy at, I think it's at Contien. So let me see if this sounds halfway decent. So, and you'll hear it since Mike brought it up. Okay, let me just tell you what this is. This is the white guy's sister talking about her brother carrying a black Marine, and then what the guy, the author who the book that Mike has talks about, that this changed this guy forever, his experience in Vietnam. So here she is, and see what she has to say.
Just see it, because I think that he is a typical, when I say a typical Marine, I think that he embraced that because the whole...
The audio sucks. It's got too much background music, but can you hear it, Mike, decent or what?
Yeah, I can hear it. It's not bad.
It's
not great.
It's not great. All right, let me just finish it. It's about 60 more seconds.
Simplify issues or term that she used. In his eyes, in the Marines, it doesn't matter whether you're a man, you're a woman. It doesn't matter what your race is, your religion. No matter what your circumstances are, you don't leave a man behind. That term, when he would use it, it really meant, it meant a whole lot more.
Yeah, anyway, wasn't that good? So, again, there's all 10 episodes are on the PBS, are on the PBS website, and they're only going to be there for a while, so watch them while you can, because at some point they'll take them down, and if you want to watch it, you'll have to wait till they rerun it again on PBS, or you buy the DVD set. So, interesting stuff. Yeah, Mike, I'd be curious if your dad's watching it.
Yeah, I'll call him and ask him.
And like I said, you know, Contien, I mean, I've heard of it. I didn't know much about it. And again, it's amazing. Just they're young guys and the casualties that they deal with are absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, I want to talk about the equipment for a second. For a few minutes anyway, the modern Marine, the modern day expo is going on right now. Could you explain to everybody what that is?
Yeah, it's like a big convention for everybody and everybody that wants to deal business with the Marine Corps. It's a bunch of sales guys, so there's a lot of neat, interesting gadgets there. Modern day Marine for me was always like, ugh. You know, because you had to deal with, oh my God, this is beautiful. We need this. Like, no, we don't need this. We don't need to have that. Why do we need this?
Are you kidding me? They have,
oh, it's like a candy store for guys that like guns and equipment. It's amazing for people that have never been there. Believe me, they are just beside themselves. Like, oh my goodness!
The equipment dorks. They go crazy there. They walk around. They get a bag and they walk around, and it's. It's pretty, they come back in a high state of spin. And then this, and then this, and this, and then it's all going to fit in your pocket. Like, that's awesome. It never seems to work like that, though.
Yeah, everything bad came out of, like, those. I mean, there's some good things, but he had so many people coming out with, like, and you got to be careful because, you know, when you're in uniform, you're speaking for the Marine Corps. And you go to these vendors, especially these mom-and-pop shop guys, they have, like, a booth and, like, two widgets on the table. And they're like, hey, you, some lieutenant comes up there or some staff sergeant, like, man, this is great. Marine Corps needs these. They go to the congressman with that, and they're like, hey, the Marine Corps wants these. And the congressman, you know, makes a phone call to the Marine Corps and says, how many do you want? And we're like, what? Yeah, it's insane, man.
All right. Hold on. I've got an email. Mac, this is an Army program, but I'd be curious to hear the gunner's comments. I saw it in Marine Corps Times this morning. I clicked on it, Mike. The headline reads, Army Rifle Replacement Program Canceled Before It Takes Off. Just 1 month into its official existence, the program to replace the Army's M4 carbine with a M762 rifle has been canceled, Army Times has confirmed. First reported Thursday by Firearms Blog, the Interim Combat Service Rifle has been in development since at least this spring and was officially announced in August when the Army sought industry samples to produce 50,000 rifles. The rifles would have replaced the M4 variant of the M16, which has been in service for half a century and fires a 5.56 round. Critics claim the round does not have the distance or lethality. Take it easy, Mike. Take it easy. Needed for modern small unit tactics, especially after upgraded body armor, has been shown to be able to defeat the 5.56 round. Most soldiers and Marines carry 5.56, M4, M16, M27, marksmen, snipers, and machine gunners fire the 7.62 round or a round of similar size. The Army is working on an intermediate caliber round and rifle combination that would fall between 5.56, 7.62, blah, 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 blah. Let's see. Army officials did not provide an official statement on short notice when contacted late Thursday afternoon. This story will be updated as additional information becomes available. What?
You know, I don't pay attention to that stuff, man. I mean, that to me is, that's just tabloid. That's tabloid.
Wait a minute. The Army canceling, right?
No, that is true. I believe
right.
that.
Right.
But this whole notion that, you know, they were going after a new gun, it's like, again, why? What was the requirement? You know, what the problem comes down to, it's called requirement. What is the requirement? The combat capability of the M4 lacks why? It's not doing its job because why? You're quoting lethality? I mean, anybody with common sense is going to listen to that. I mean, lethal? Hell, like I said, I used to show the example of a pen is lethal if you know how to use it, a ballpoint pen. But no one would make the argument that the pen is more lethal than the gun. But if I shoot you in the foot with the gun and I stab you in the side of the head with the pen, you die because of the pen. So in that case, yeah. That's lethality. It's how you use it. It's placement. It's nothing to do with cartridge, anything like that. That is the biggest BS story that there is. That these guys sit there and they talk about lethality. You know, you can't quote lethality. Firepower. What does that mean? Oh, when I shoot you, you go flying through the window. No, that's Hollywood because they have a cable attached to the guy. And then when they hear the bang, a guy hits a switch, and the cable pulley pulls the guy through the window. That doesn't happen in real life.
Okay.
So these people, you know, that run these programs are kind of, they have this mentality or this belief, this wrong belief sometimes, what reality is. What is it? What is reality? Oh, I just watched TV. Shut up. TV is not reality, it's entertainment. You know, it has nothing to do with real life. Even those shows, Cops, and, you know, where they're doing real life, real, you know, real time, they're still edited, guys.
It's not real?
It is real, But the sense of, you know, again, it's all editing. It's the editing floor, because police jobs, in most part, like the police day, is boring. Who would... Would you watch a TV show where a cop is just going over to get his speeding tickets and parking violations? No, neither would I. I mean, it's you know, again, there's reality and then there's whatever make-believe stuff that people put up, and that's what they believe. You can't tell them any different, and, you know.
All right. Ugh. All right. So, okay. All right. Here's another. I just got emailed another link. Mac, check this out. I'd be curious to hear what the gunner has to say about this. This is like Ask the Gunner a Question Day. I love it. Should all infantry, this is another article in Marine Corps Times. Should all infantry squad leaders be staff sergeants? Top Marine leaders are looking at whether rifle company squad leaders should be staff sergeants as combat becomes faster and more complex. In recent experiments in small unit tactics and technology added the assistant squad leader position to rifle company formations. These positions have been filled by sergeants.
Right.
Lieutenant Colonel Whitman, who is doing this presentation, noted that increasing complexity of infantry jobs as squad leaders now have more gear, communications, and fires at their disposal than ever before. For that reason, he said, leaders are looking to fill the assistant squad leader with a sergeant and considering whether the squad leader billet should be held by a staff sergeant. What do you think,
well,
Mike?
I think that's nonsense, because then you could take that argument and say, well, then why can't platoon sergeants be gunning for that same reason? And if you're going that route, then why don't we do assistant platoon commanders and put another lieutenant in there? Because that's a bit luck to manage.
We used to do that.
Yeah, I know. Well, the thing is, the Army does platoon sergeants and staff sergeants. They're not any good at it. Doesn't make them better. You know, I would beg to differ, because, like I said, with the right training, we had an MOS, and I don't know where that's gone, but we were going to do an MOS strictly for squad leaders, and it was going to be a career progression, you know, where this guy went through, he signed up or he applied, he got the MOS for squad leader, and it was like 03 something, 60, let's just pretend, I don't know what it was.
Okay.
And after that MOS, after he got it, then he required to go to all these schools and then do all these things and then prepare him for, you know, the job of a squad leader. So I don't get the whole, you know, the rank has really nothing to do with it. It's how we train them. Because, like I said, if rank was it, then the Army's program would be the model program. And it's not. Because in the Army, you have to be a staff sergeant, be a platoon sergeant.
So the recent experiment of plussing up squads, giving them more communications, in theory, they operate at wider distances. That in and of itself is not indicative of somebody who needs more rank. It needs to be somebody who has different training.
Yeah, a lot more training. I mean, you know, it was the whole, why isn't there JTACs in a squad?
Right.
Why isn't that job there? Give them the tools to be successful. You know, keep them in. And that was the other thing I think that was really kind of the big question was, we were going to keep these guys in the infantry for so long, and people were like, oh, we're going to burn them out. I beg to differ. I know a lot of infantry guys that were sergeants and corporals that got out of the Marine Corps because they wanted to stay in the infantry. They didn't want to go on D-billet. They didn't want to go through this stuff. This is what they signed up to do, and now you're taking away for it. They're like, you know what? I'm out. But yeah, you're always going to have the ones that are going to be like, oh man, I don't want to be in the infantry my whole life. But you don't need all of those guys. You just need, you know, a few, when it comes down to the numbers, of the guys that are willing to stick it out for everybody.
Interesting. Interesting. The no, but you know, the Marine Corps has been messing with the TO of the rifle squad, you know, as small as 10, as much as 15, 18, I think, in some cases. And then,
yeah,
you know, with this premise that, you know, given modern lethality, we're going to have to spread out more. There's more communications inside of a platoon than there ever has been in the history of the Marine Corps. And then those squads have, you know, have increased lethality at their at their disposal. So so that's behind the argument. I've got another question, Mac. I was looking through the Marine Corps Times recently, talked about lightweight body armor. I'm curious, relative to equipment, would Mike say that's the number one requirement, is to make the load lighter for Marines?
No, Mike, I would say the number one requirement is communication.
Overload.
Mic up everybody.
Mic up everybody. And then, okay, so let's rank those. And then after that, how about load?
See, body armor is survivability.
Okay.
Right? You have mobility, survivability, communication, and then in that case, you have weaponry, firepower, but not in the sense that everybody talks about it. So those are those, but communication needs to happen first. Because it doesn't matter how light you are, if you can't talk to anybody, you know, it's not going to work. And that's the biggest one, is, and it's inter-squad communication. I'm not talking about, you know, company type, you know, we need everybody to talk to the battalion. No. I need information going real time so these guys can respond to what I need them to do. You know, that type of thing.
Okay. So communication one, and then after communication, load. Next question. Let's see. Mac, I too was perusing Marine Corps Times, saw an article a few days ago about integrated suppressors. First of all, what is an integrated suppressor, Mike?
It's built into the gun. You don't screw it on. It's part of the barrel. It's one and the same.
Okay. And so it simply comes that way. Do you know Christian Wade?
Yeah, Gunner Wade replaced me in Quantico.
He is now 2nd Marine Division. He's now the 2nd Marine Division gunner.
Yep. And he's the one that took all that suppressor stuff and ran with it and is really the force behind of where they're at right now. He's doing all these tests in the 2nd Marine Division regarding suppressors.
It's
amazing.
He's a YouTube guy too.
Yeah. He's changed a lot. I mean, ever since he took that job in Quantico, you know, it's like, who's this guy?
He was
a very quiet to himself, kind of guy. You know, but, you know, and I think it was in Torrance Palms, you know, we were all talking, and just like a lot of other gunners, they didn't know that there was a problem because they didn't see it. And so when, you know, Gunner Eby and I and a lot of some other guys brought him into the fold, then he was the new champion.
There's a video of him frying bacon on his suppressor.
Yeah, I know. He does some crazy stuff.
Hold on. Let me play this for you. He's got this series called Fact or Fiction that he puts out videos. Hold on. There's an ad that'll play. But so you may meet Chris Wade when he comes, when you left the division to go to Quantico to go to Afghanistan?
Well, I left the regiment. Well, no, I'm sorry. I left Quantico to go to the regiment. to go to Afghanistan.
To go to Afghanistan. So he replaced you in Quantico then?
Yeah, he took my job.
Okay. All right. So that's the first time you meet him.
No, I've known him before then, but
all right,
I mean, that was the first time.
Hold on. Listen to this.
Yeah.
All right, Marines, just to be clear, don't do this with your U.S. Marine Corps issue rifle. I don't recommend it. You might get in some trouble. But this rifle is not a U.S. Marine Corps issue rifle. So we're going to cook some bacon on it, just to show you how hot your suppressor can get. And I'm hungry. This is about it.
Okay, now he's wrapping bacon around his suppressor.
America as you can get right here.
Now he's applied a little bit of foil. Now he looks at, the target and makes a noise. Looks at the target a second time, frowns, and he's smelling bacon. Now he's sniffing the bacon as it fries on the suppressor and smiling.
Not crispy yet. What do you say? We need a little more?
He likes his bacon crispy.
Oh, vaporized it. Guess we're not eating today.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
So now you know. Be careful with your suppressor. It gets hot.
That is awesome. Mike, you were made for that series, man. You could have been like a digital magnate in the Marine Corps with your personality. Come on.
No. You know what? If you want to, I'll get Chris and I'll call Chris and see if he wants to come on because he'd be a hoot, man.
No, we'd love to have him because, you know, all these things that we hear about. Integrated suppressor. You're a yes guy. But, you know, one of the things you said is that they're only good for X number of rounds, right?
Yeah, but so is a barrel. You know, a barrel is only good for X amount of rounds too. So, but with technologies and new metallurgy, things are really getting different. I mean, they're getting better and better and better. We're making better things.
Okay, so, but it's going to be a question of price in terms of.
So, you know, what used to be just kind of a cheap type, you know, materials now, you know, they're Inconels, they're
we lost him. He muted his microphone. He does this shit. Mid sentence, boom, vanishes. Hold on. All right, let me take a break. We'll get Mike back on the phone. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world, leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue. Communications have been restored. What happened?
Yeah, it was weird.
What happened?
I don't know. It just all said. Also, my phone went beep, 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 and then I tried to call you back, and then it just kept failing. Call fail. So.
All right. So finish the thought. So we're gonna get the gunner on, and we'll have like two gunners on the same program. That'll be awesome, man.
Yeah. Chris is a good dude, man. He's as good as they come.
Is he funny? Because
he's a different type of funny.
The bacon thing is pretty funny.
Yeah. he's a funny guy.
All right. Before I think when we talked about suppressors, and we talked about them a number of times, you made the point, like, does everybody need one?
No.
Right. And so if not everybody needs one, then you can buy better, right? You can buy better. If everybody needs one, then it's something else. Or you do two different buys, one for infantrymen and people that are going to be close, and then others for just everybody else that's not going to shoot very much. So I'm not sure how to do that. I guess smarter guys than me will figure it out. But, you know, we're not all crazy.
Well, the problem is everybody's going to want one.
I know.
Like an M4. Do you know how hard it was when they passed, you know, the Commandant signed an order that basically said that we were going to outfit all the infantry battalions were going to be M4 pure. Okay?
Right.
And then they came back and said, this is how this went down. At first they were saying, okay, how are we going to do this? We said, then the Marcor Syscom guys came back and said, well, we have enough in the inventory in the Marine Corps. We don't have to buy new ones. We have to reallocate them. And then that's it. So everybody's like, yeah, let's do that. That's the most inexpensive way, which I agree. The problem came into was we had to go to the wing. We had to go to the FSSG. We had to go to all these other units that owned them with this letter from the Commandant that said, turn them in. Give them back. No one honored it. People were like you're taking their children away. I ain't giving this up. What about us? You know, I don't care. It's not about you. It's a much bigger picture, Jen. What are we going to get? You're going to get the M16. I don't want the M16. You know, well, I don't care what you want. This is what you're going to get. Since when did the Marine Corps, you know, was founded on what you want?
Yeah.
I want this.
When did we become a democracy?
Yeah. Well, when it came to the M4, man, there were a lot of commanders that were like, no, you know? And so then they look back at the option of, okay, would it be cheaper just to buy it? And I, you know, I'm sitting there going, are you kidding me, guys? You're a 3-star general and you got a colonel telling you no and you're taking that? You know? And I think it was Tulin when I finally bought it to Tulin when he was at MASS. Tulin being Tulin's like, I don't give a fuck what they want, Gunner. Get them back. You know, so it was like, okay. And so then when we took them back, it was like, whose authority do you have doing this? Tulin. General Pike, three star, your boss. Well, why'd you have to talk to General Toulon about it? Because you told me no. You know, you're a commander, you're a colonel in the Airwing. What power do I have over you? So, you know, I went to your boss. I went to the boss of bosses, because I'm not going to sit there and go one stage above. Then I'm going to go to the mag. Then I'm going to go to the, you know, this. I'm going to go to that. And everybody's permission. No, just get it done. So we got done. And, man, there were a lot of unhappy people, let me tell you. Now you're going to put the pressures on a gun, and then people are going to be like, again, what about me?
Oh, no. Let me tell you, I mean, well, you were there when it was going on, the whole, and we've talked about this a little bit before, but 2004 in Iraq, the whole ACOG thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was either a one map or a division purchase, and then you had units coming from other divisions, and they one of the first questions they would ask when they would come in on their pre-deployment site survey was, when do we get our ACOGs? Like,
yeah,
I guess when you buy them. Well, wait a minute. Remember that? Oh man.
Well, you would tell people, then you would say, all right, well, you know what? I'm going to have to go to the infantry battalions that are actually in combat with the enemy and take theirs. And then you would expect a person to say, oh, no, you know what? No. So they'd go, okay, what's the timeline that we're looking at? What?
Exactly.
You would try that, and that wouldn't work. You know, try and guilt them. Right. Okay, let me go to the infantry
and, you're goofing,
and have them pop it up.
And you're goofing them to begin with.
Yeah, and they're like, okay, so what do we... What timeline do we expect them to have them then? I'm like, you're a piece of shit.
You're an idiot. Here's another email.
I hated those guys.
Mac, finally, somebody has a little article, not just normal blah, blah, blah from the internet, but there's actually an article in Marine Corps Times.
Man, you went mute.
About General Mattis's, or should I say Secretary Mattis's call sign.
That's not his call sign. That's the division's call sign.
Yeah. The whole Mad Dog thing, I never heard that. And Michael...
Well, Mad Dog's not his call sign. Chaos.
Yeah.
Chaos is the division's call sign.
And so he was asked about...
Mad Dog.
He was asked about it recently. Yeah. And he said... I wish I could tell you that it has some great meaning, he said, but what happened was how I found out about it. He said, I was a regimental commander in 29 Palms. Out there, there's nothing to do but blow up the desert. I was leaving my operations office, and he noticed the word chaos written on the OPSO's whiteboard. I said, what's that about? I'm curious, you know. We all are. He says, oh, you don't need to know about that, which only made me more curious. Finally, he kind of said, well, it means Colonel has an outstanding solution. And it was very much tongue-in-cheek, ladies and gentlemen. They didn't consider all my solutions quite as outstanding as I enthusiastically promoted them. Mattis then said he had ended up adopting the moniker as his call sign, Chaos. So, and he enjoyed it, too. By the way, but that's the true story of his call sign. Mad Dog was never Mad Dog's a media invention and never used by him or used by his subordinates. So interesting.
No.
Interesting. All right. What about the plans for the weekend? Your wife back from her work trip or what?
Yeah, she was at Rice. I'm in Houston, Rice University.
Oh, really? Where is it? Rice is in Dallas?
Or Houston.
Oh, okay. Whoa. What'd she say? Houston, how's Houston doing?
Well, yeah, she didn't have any problems. I mean, she didn't see any flooding. Didn't mean it didn't happen, but...
Right. Certain parts of the city, I'm sure, more affected than others.
Yeah.
All right. So she's back home, so your life is back to normal?
Yeah, she goes to Clemson this week.
Wow. Like, what is she, like, Miss I Get Around the Country?
No, I mean, this is just their recruiting time, you know, so they go out and they recruit for their company.
Well, that's not a bad job. Is she, so how much traveling will she do? Why don't you, are you going to go with her? You go hang out.
I don't want to go to Clemson. That's in Carolina, South Carolina, man. Why would I want to go to South Carolina?
This time of year, it's not as humid.
I don't care if it was freaking beautiful out.
You don't want
to. I don't think you understood me. I don't want to go to Clemson.
You don't want to go to Clemson. All right, I got it.
Yeah.
Another email. Mac, two questions for Mike. One, has he seen body armor that's much lighter but yet too expensive for the DOD to purchase, but it's on the horizon? Two, what happens when somebody jams all the electronics? No drones, no nothing. Then what happens? All right, so Mike, answer the first one. Body armor technology, is it out there and not affordable yet? Have you seen it?
It's what drives technology in that arena is need.
Okay.
So when you have a need and you have the requirement and people are asking for it, it'll drive industry to produce it. You dump enough money into it, you know, they'll come up with the solution. You know what I mean? So, do I know, have we dumped enough money into it? Obviously not. We don't have the right piece of gear yet.
Right.
We're getting there. You know, what would be the right piece of gear one day would be like a liquid gel type that would conform to your body. It would also act as a cooling or a heating type element to it.
Wow.
You know, but these are all things that, like I said, they're all futuristic. They're concepts, they're theories, they're designs. But it's going to take a lot of capital, like they used to say in the business, man. You want Buck Rogers? It's going to cost you a lot of bucks. Right?
Right.
So, you know, you don't get things like that on the cheap. Definitely don't. So, yeah, you gotta invest in it, man. And, I don't know where they're at. I mean, I know it was always an issue. Lightweight gear was always an issue.
Right.
But it came down to money. You know, how light is light? You know, because to get ounces at this point, to shed off ounces, you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars for an ounce. So is it worth it?
Right.
You know, those are those questions. Is it worth to spend the money, you know, $300,000 to shave off 3 ounces of weight? Or do you wait for technology to catch up? And then it's a big shave off at once, you know?
All right. How about the second question? What happens when somebody develops a way to jam all this digital stuff that's going on? Drones are microwave shots. Then what?
Well, then you're back to the Stone Age. So make sure you don't have you still train for yellow canaries. And laying wire, tactical wire, comm wire, you know, with sound-powered phones and messengers.
And compasses.
Because radios.
And compasses.
A compass would not be affected by an EMP. Now, GPS would.
Right.
Because the iron ore deposits, you know, in Hudson Bay, that type of thing, they're always going to point north.
Right. So there you have it. Keep your compass. Keep your lens at it, compass. Good advice.
Yeah, the basic stuff's always going to be there.
And
you know, but your ACOG and those type of sights are still going to work.
Right.
You know, the battery illuminates the reticle, but it's not what's going to not work is your communications, your GPS signals, your tablets, you know, all of that stuff.
All of that stuff that we're moving towards in a permissive environment where we run the show, but when you're looking at fighting, I guess the Russians and the Chinese, What does it look like when you're fighting a peer that has that kind of, you know, close technology that you have? How does the battlefield change? Interesting. Interesting. All right, man. Any big plans over the weekend?
No, I'm going to dinner tonight.
What are you going to have?
I'm having probably sea bass, Chilean sea bass.
Okay, for those of you that have never had Chilean sea bass, it's incredible. Exactly. It is
best
delicious.
Thing in the world.
Yeah, it is delicious. Absolutely delicious. The next light armored reconnaissance vehicle that the Marine Corps adopts must show massive improvements over the current arsenal. All of this coming out of the modern day Marine Exposition.
Who said?
Lieutenant General Walsh. Huh. On Thursday. What we certainly don't want to do is buy new old stuff, Deputy Commandant for Combat Development and Integration said. The Marine Corps is looking for the next generation of an LAV, a vehicle that is decades old. We need it to look something like the F-35, a generational change. Then the three-star rattled off some items that the service wants to see, such as information sharing between vehicles, active protection systems that allow such systems as the Abrams tank, the ability to launch drones for reconnaissance missions. Walsh recounted an APS demonstration he saw on tanks and how he spoke to Israeli Army officers about their experience with the tank's ability shifted their tactical thinking. Blah, 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 blah. That's right. It all works till somebody jams all of it. Then?
Yeah. But then, you know what? Who has that sophistication that can jam that?
And do it on a sustained basis, right? Because
if the Taliban could have done it, they would have already done it.
Right, right. Interesting. But it's the first thing that you would need to dominate in a war with a peer, and that would be you would need to destroy our satellites. You would need to, you know, essentially poking somebody's eyes out.
Blind them
is. Involves satellites and a lot of different things these days. Certainly is easy.
Right.
Certainly is easy. Which takes us back to, you know, the guys who were at Contien, you know, they had lensatic compasses. They had a brand new rifle called the M16. And, they built bases under the artillery fan of the NVA and then went out and manned them, went out and fought. So if you get a chance, by all means, I would tell everybody to watch. Last night, I think, was the fifth episode. Check that out. Contien, holy shit, man. And then Marines that went up into the NVA, into the DMZ to fight, they talk about, you know, how formidable the North Vietnamese Army was. They would close with you. They were experts at movement and being able to get close to you, and they weren't afraid. They weren't afraid to die. And so, pretty interesting. That at least sets the Marine perspective. You hear also, NVA veterans talking about how they got annihilated. And so it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And this is before Tet. This is before Tet when they get blood white all over the country. So anyway, all right, man. I appreciate it as always. Have a good day.
All right, I'll talk to you later, man.
There you have it. The one and only Michael Musselman from Granbury, Texas. The gun. That'll do it on a Friday. Back in the high life. The reason I end the program with this song is because a lot of our peers, you know, didn't come back. And we as veterans owe it to them to live the high life. Whatever it takes, how many times you need to go to therapy, irrelevant. Everybody who comes back, you have a chance. And we need to do that to honor their sacrifice so we can tell their story and bear our witness to the courage and selflessness that we've seen. Tell you what, though, make sure you watch the PBS series. Honestly, I mean, wow. And as we said earlier, and I'd be happy to end the program with this, there is no generation greater than the Americans that went to Vietnam and fought and did so nobly, came back and were treated to the back of people's hands, and then were left alone for so many years. And throughout all of that, continued to do good things in communities and in life. Yeah. So I don't know how you get better than that. And I would tell you this. You know, one of the things that's heartbreaking is when you hear them tell stories about how when they came home, they got shit on by World War II veterans. Can't believe you guys couldn't kick their asses. And this is no insult to anybody, but in terms of the different forms of combat that you'll see, what they did in Vietnam, a little bit more difficult than what happened in World War II in Korea. I mean, it's always difficult at the point where people are getting killed, but everybody wearing a uniform, we're here, they're there, major formations, front lines. I would argue that that's easier to deal with than the form of fighting that was done in Vietnam. Not as organized. Limited, quote unquote, except when it comes your way. So, program's dedicated to the greatest generation of American fighters, and that is Vietnam fighters. Good on them. Anyway, this program repeats itself momentarily. So, whatever you do, don't touch that dial. We'll be back on Monday. Trying to get the Tom Drowdy to join us. He's been on vacation and started working again, screwing me up. So we'll get General Drowdy on. He's a Vietnam guy. And get his thoughts on what he's seen. And again, from a few different perspectives. And I think as we rotate the lens, of our critique relative to the PBS documentary. Anyway, have a great weekend. On a Friday, All Marine Radio, over and...